Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our...
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all. Online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hi, this is Chris West, and I'm here with my co-host and friend Jim Bradley.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Afternoon, and today on House Calls Vermont, we're going to do part two of our indoor air quality discussion. Last week we had a great discussion, and the video for that will be on our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and look up House Calls Vermont, and you can take a look at that. The upside to watching our videos is that when I edit the videos, I'm able to put a lot of graphics in which describe the concepts that we're talking about. So you may have heard it twice if you're watching the video, but you'll also get links. If we bring up links, those will be in the information on the YouTube channel as well. So we encourage you to go and take a look. And if you like what we're doing, like and subscribe. We're trying to grow the YouTube channel as well as the audience here for the show. This week, I have installed one of those IQ Air monitors that we were talking about that Robin King told us about. They were using at Efficiency Vermont, and we have it on here in the studio. The studio we're in is, I think, if I was to say, this is 5x7 or something, the room with an 8-foot tall ceiling, maybe a little taller. And we started off the carbon dioxide reading at the beginning before we closed the door so that we get the sound right in the room here was at 887 parts per million. We've had the door closed for less than 2 minutes, and we're already up to 1,064. So we'll keep you posted on what the indoor air quality monitor is telling us about the air quality here in the actual dump, which is the name of the studio we're in. But we're going to, in the meantime, continue talking about the list for indoor air quality we left off last week. And we're talking about the various types of indoor air quality problems you can have. We talked about carbon dioxide. We talked about carbon monoxide. We talked about particulates, mouse droppings, etc., mold, and we stopped on radon. That's we got to the end of the show after getting some great calls from you people. And by the way, once again, we love your input. It's really helping us understand what's going on with you, and we're glad to give you guys help. We've been getting a lot of emails. Please feel free to email us at housecallsvt@gmail.com or call in at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
Yeah, once again, Chris, you know.
Hold on. We're up to 1128. Jim said I'm going to be watching this monitor the whole show, and he's right.
Once again, you know, I do want to thank all of our listeners and those who are participating. It's really surprising and heartening for Chris and myself both that we are getting this type of response from the listeners and the type of questions that are coming in. Even some that I read this morning on the email, just well thought out questions. People are looking for the answers that they're not able to find from some of their contractors out there, and it's great. And so anything we can do to help and help you avoid falling off the cliff and then wondering why later would be great, and that's why we're here. So
one of the things that I'm seeing in some of the emails is exactly what we see when we're on audits. When we look at someone, we say, oh, you did that, and you did that before you called us, right? And one of them was about a roof. Well, I did have the roof redone and I'd like to do this. Well, think about that before we go forward, and hopefully call in about those questions first, and we can help you avoid the staging. It's really, we call that in
sequencing
or staging. Yep. When you do something, in what order, in order to get the best bang for your buck. And so that's, we're really trying to avoid, or help you to avoid spending money in the wrong place and getting the best bang for your buck.
And going on this indoor air quality monitor that we're using and testing out, it's similar to what I did with a study with Brian Just with Efficiency Vermont. Chris did the same thing, and they did it for several other people, just closing the door at night when you sleep to see how
in the bedroom,
much, in the bedroom, and how much the CO2 levels will rise. Anything once it starts getting over 1,000 parts per million is not where you want to be. You don't sleep as well. You start having other stresses on the body. It can actually lead to irritability. That's not the only excuse for irritability.
Tiredness,
not as focused during the day. But so we're right now in this smaller space, which could be the size of a bedroom for some, we're almost at 1,200 parts per million, and it just keeps on rising. So by the end of this, if we haven't passed out yet, we will definitely let you know what that final reading is.
So the study that Brian just did, he initiated a study on the indoor air quality, I think it was 3 years ago.
Yes.
Although he did publish a paper on it, it started out as a kind of relaxed, finding people in the office at Efficiency Vermont and having them use them in their homes, because the people who work for Efficiency Vermont are a really good cross-section of homeowners in Vermont. Some people live in old leaky houses, old leaky farmhouses, which have a lot of charm but are very difficult to keep well comfortable. Some people live in very modern houses with balanced ventilation and air tightened outside. The air leakage has been controlled. So he had 22 houses in that study. And the protocol was that you took this very sensitive indoor air quality monitor, and you had to put it at a certain height, and so that it wasn't on the floor or too high, so that we were getting the same kind of air that you'd be breathing, right? You put it on the ceiling, you're not getting what you'd be breathing. You put it on the floor, it was right there at about 3 feet, about the height of your bed. And you were asked to leave the door open one night, and then close the next night, and then open the night after that, and close the night after that. And the reason for that was to take into account the changes in weather, right? Because weather influences how a house works. If it's really cold outside, if it's really windy outside, if it's really windy and cold, all those are going to have different effects on the reading. So we try to get more than, you know, one reading in each of the states. And I'll have a copy of the report and screenshots in the video when we get there, when I produce the video of this show. And what we show is that a number of these houses, first of all the houses that don't have balanced ventilation with the door closed, were well above 2,000 parts per million. And one of them was breaking the system. The system topped out at 5,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. And this particular house was, you know, completely above that. And so the graphic shows very clearly which houses were staying below that level. The door open helped a lot, but having the door closed and having balanced ventilation was as good. So my house ended up being the best house in the study because I installed a balanced ventilation system, and my house is very airtight. So those two things work very well together.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, what Chris was going on this, too, is we're going to go back.
Just a second. 1,271.
1,271 parts per million of CO2.
In this room.
Yep. And so with that.
So if we start getting loopy.
Start. Continue to get worse, I guess. But Chris was going off on radon, let's put it that way. And you know what it is, we talked about it a little bit last week, and you know, you can have radon off-gassing in a field and it's not a problem. It's when you get into your living space, if you have a dirt crawl space, even a concrete a basement floor, you can get radon accumulation inside of these homes. And that's why it's so important to deal with this. There are 21,000 deaths estimated in North America just through radon contamination or poisoning, you know, the cancers that causes every year. And so, you know, making sure that the environment in which we're living in, once again, whether it's in a hot climate and you keep things closed up with air conditioning running, or it's in a cold climate and you keep things closed up to make sure it's heated well, you've got to make sure you're dealing with these types of contaminants.
One of the emails we got was a question about having a high radon reading one time at 4.9 or something. You're supposed to be 4 picocuries per liter or less. And they said they tested it again and were under, slightly under 4 picometers, picocuries per liter. They then asked whether it might be a good idea to just put a bath fan in the basement and use that to remove that bad air so it wouldn't travel up. This is an unused basement, to travel up into the living spaces. And the data that we have on using ventilation for that type of space is that it is not effective at removing the radon to the levels that we need it to be removed. We really want to remove it before it gets into the house. And this homeowner was saying, it's just way too much money for us to put in a radon system now. Is there some less expensive way that we can, you know, hedge our bets? And I said, what I would recommend is to get your own radon monitor and to data log it, because although you may be sitting there at slightly under 4, under certain conditions you may be above 4 and you may be well below 4 picocuries per liter. And if the average is 4, which is really what we're looking at, is that the average 4 or less picocuries per liter, then you don't have to do anything. That's the maximum level that we've decided. We're about to hit 1,300 parts per million of carbon dioxide here in the studio. So that's what I want to just point out. When we're working with mitigation or trying to deal with radon in our houses, we have to be careful not to think of solutions that are not going to help. And by the way, if we start depressurizing that basement, you may be sucking more radon gas in, right? Where is the air coming from that's infiltrating when you depressurize? So that's the problem. You could be sucking more radon gas in by putting a bath fan in. So I just want to get back to that study. Jim had was a part of the study as well, and he has, instead of having a whole house balanced ventilation system, he has 2 spot ventilation systems, which are very good for retrofits because it's just a small unit. You put a hole through the wall, you stick it on, and the one that he has is called the Zender CA70, mm-hmm. and that has a heat exchanger in it. So it's HRV, heat recovery ventilation, and it's totally changed the amount of fresh air in the rooms that they were put in.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, once again, why this is so important. There's a colleague of ours that recently was looking at a house, even this last week, and they got a radon reading that came back. I think it was almost at 6. It was 5 point something. And it was almost at 6 picocuries per liter. And when that came in, she was asking me, what should I do? I said, well, you got to get somebody to get a radon mitigation system in there for you before I would even make an offer. You know, find out what the cost is. Include that in your offer, and you know, to cover the cost of that, because she was going to be buying it as a rental, I believe, and then you don't want to have the tenants in there, and then you're introducing hazards into the airstream, and you could be liable for that, and plus the people could get sick. So you definitely don't want those things happening.
Yes, we'd much rather people not get sick than worry about what my legal exposure is, but in the end, those two things are tied together.
Yep. So, you know, some of the things why this is important, why it became, you know, near and dear to my heart on this, is because my boys, my 2 older boys, when they were just small ones, sharing the same bedroom upstairs, seasonally, before I got into the building science side, seasonally, they would get these respiratory issues, coughing all the time, a lot of, you know, congestion and everything else, and I couldn't figure out where this was coming from. And so then I popped my head up in the attic, and this is a 1989 Cape, and somebody thought it was a great idea to take the bath fan and vent it into the attic.
Directly into the attic!
Because that $12 vent hood was so expensive not to put to the outdoors, and it created a black mold situation. And, you know, granted, there's black mold, and then there's toxic black mold, but all mold is, you know, it's a fungus. It's going to affect you if you take in too much of this. And with that, the boys were being affected. Fast forward, after I treated that all, I ended up having to replace the sheathing, deal with the mold, and then do comprehensive air sealing in the attic so the attic air didn't circulate with the interior spaces. And after that, we have another young one that now lives in that bedroom. He's 10 or 11 years old, and he does not have any effects.
Is he 10 or 11?
Well, he's going to be 11.
He's on the border.
He's rocking back and forth. But no, seriously, he has not had any kind of lung issues whatsoever, or respiratory, seasonal respiratory issues. So it does make a big difference. difference. And when you, you know, one of the things that Chris put out last week was, if you notice changes in your health, especially seasonally, that things start to happen, not just because of allergies during the summer months or late fall, but really during the winter, once you start closing things up, pay attention to that and get things checked out. And this week we have Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont returning once again, and he's going to add a little bit of his thoughts towards indoor air quality.
But before Steve starts, I just want to point out we're at 1295. We have not broken 1300.
But the ventilation in the building here has kicked on, and so that's helping mitigate some of that concentration.
I think it's a kind of proof that the ventilation is working.
Exactly. But Steve, welcome today, and how you doing, sir?
Doing all right. A little sad, just thinking you guys might kick me off again.
No!
It'll be more exciting. It'll be better.
Hey, you just got to bring the A game every week, Steve.
That's right. Well, it's good to hear you guys are monitoring your indoor air quality today.
Yeah, we got one of those monitors, and it's a beautiful unit. I got to say, I'm really impressed.
A little bit distracting. It's a little bit distracting, though. It's easy to geek out about it just because...
We hit 1,300, oh no!
And we want the smiley face that we're doing okay.
Yeah, then you can assign blame as to who's contributing more, right?
Oh, I'm sure that's Chris.
Hot air, man.
So you, what are your thoughts on this, Steve? You know, you've got old housing stock, brand new housing stock. So you got a house that's going to be built intrinsically tighter, you know, just by default, by what some of the practices that are being followed currently in, with new housing. But then you have the old leaky house. But then you've got to deal with indoor air quality in both those sides of the equation. What are your thoughts on some of these things, Steve?
Indoor air quality is huge, and it's just often just so easily overlooked. And I heard you guys before the break talking about considering your symptoms and things that may crop up seasonally. And, you know, that just goes to show you that there really is a lot of things that can connect to affect the quality of the air that you breathe and then how that impact your health. So, you know, it's a broad range of dynamics at play depending on the type of construction you have, but, you know, new construction, you know, you do have a lot of moisture to manage. You know, thankfully now with new construction and where we're at with the codes is we, you know, typically you're not going to have any sort of fuel burning combustion equipment that's using indoor air or can be depressurized and pulled into the house. As part of new construction standards, but certainly a factor in older homes, existing homes. And that's something that, you know, I think any homeowner can start to be aware of some things to be mindful of in their home to just keep an eye on, as we, especially this time of year, as you said, we start to close up the house. Things like unvented appliances, wood stoves, making sure that they're drafting properly and maintenance and cleaning, CO detectors, for sure. That is not something to be overlooked. Or, you know, when the battery beeps at you, don't take the battery out and say, oh, yeah, I'll get to that.
Or when it starts going off when you cook. When it starts going off when you cook, we've had so many customers tell us this, oh, I just took that thing down because it kept going off. Well, it's telling you something. You shouldn't ignore it.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger. Just turn the robot off. There's no danger.
Yep. Yeah, unvented appliances is a big thing.
Yes.
You know, a propane cook stove, propane oven and range top, that's an unvented appliance. You're burning fuel in your house, and unless you have a range hood, which hopefully you do, that you can use when you're running the oven especially, you know, you are putting those. Hopefully if it's tuned right, it's not putting too much carbon monoxide in the room, but your CO detector will tell you that, but you are also getting other particulates into the air that you're breathing as well. And that goes for space or room heaters, unvented room, propane room heaters, gas inserts to fireplaces, those sorts of things. So, you know, these are things to be, if you are aware that you have them in your home, they are appliances that need maintenance and attention occasionally.
Maintenance? You mean like actually making sure it's burning right and changing that F thing, that filter?
The F word.
These are thoughts to have, yes. Worth thinking about.
Definitely.
And while you're also there, too, you know, as trying to keep the other items of indoor air quality in check and being able to ventilate the building properly, you know, understanding what the condition is of the bath fans you have in your house. Mm. You know, in an existing house, it's hard to retrofit in a balanced ventilation system often.
Yep, agreed.
It's not impossible, but it's often a challenge. So most of the time or a fair amount of the time in existing homes, you're trying to work with the ventilation that you may have already, which is typically your bath fans. and being able to put some controls on them to get them to run as a as an automatic system throughout
right.
the day. One quick thing a homeowner can easily do to see how your bath fans are working and see if they're actually pulling air the way that they should be is to turn your bath fan on and take a tissue and hold it up to that fan, and hopefully it will suck that tissue out of your hand up to the fan and hold it against the fan. That'll give you some good indication that the fan's sucking air the way that it should.
Don't leave the tissue in place after this test.
You don't need to filter your air that way.
No. And you might want to vacuum those, you know, when you get an actual ventilation fan in the bathroom. Just because you have a great collection of cobwebs up there and dust, you may not want to keep it there because it can't work as well. So I would say vacuuming these things out on a regular basis, real easy step, and it's going to make that more effective at the same time.
And I'd say your point about controls for those is really important because...
Oh, $25.
Yeah, $25 for the humidistat or for the self-timer, and it removes the human factor. I know when we're doing Passive House Consulting, when we're doing something and we're figuring out something that a person has to interact with, right? Most of the time it has to do with shades, oddly enough. So if I'm going to put shades up on my house and because it's overheating because there's too much solar gain, and I turn around and I say to the person I'm doing the consulting for, if you put a shade that blocks the entire window, I can't put 0% in for that shade, how much sunlight it's letting out, because sometimes you forget to close it. So we have a fudge factor for the human factor saying that, okay, we'll give you 35% of the sun, 65 blocked, because sometimes you just forget to close it. And if we remove the person from that, especially dealing with these exhaust ventilation systems, that really helps making sure that if you're depending on those fans for your healthy indoor air quality, that you're not depending on you being the thing that makes it do that.
Absolutely. Yep. Unfortunately, humans, we can be a little unforgetful and sometimes unreliable to our own good, our own well-being. So, yeah, taking the human out of the equation on systems like this that we need to run throughout the day and on their own, it just makes it easier for everyone.
Definitely. Definitely. All right, Steve. Well, we thank you for joining us this week once again, and we definitely look forward to next week as well. It's going to be on Windows, and just give you a little bit of an update or a tag of what we're going to be doing then. So we look forward to that discussion as well, sir.
Could you throw out the website information again, and so that everybody can hear it?
Absolutely. I'll go to efficiencyvermont.com, and you can search for tips and information on indoor air quality and healthy homes. Just type in that keyword and look under programs, and you'll find some information on this.
Excellent, Steve. Hey, thanks again for joining us.
Have a good weekend, Steve.
All right, guys. You too. Take care.
Thank you. And one of the things that Steve mentioned was unvented propane appliances.
Ah.
Yeah, that's really a hazard, too. I was in a house this summer, and all the windows were open, and I was just checking things out, walking through, and I usually carry a belt CO monitor on. It's very sensitive. And I walked around this one propane stove. I got close to it, not even next to it, and it was going off. And you think, well, why in the middle of the summer was that going off? It has a pilot light. And so a couple things in mind there. One, the pilot light's constantly burning, which is wasting fuel, but it's also putting those particulates in the air. It's an unvented appliance, so it's going into the living space. And then think of this. Not only is it an old leaky house that people would think that, oh, I'll get enough fresh air, but they were actually starting to insulate the house and make changes. So they were tipping the scales one direction or the other, and you have to really start considering once you change the dynamic of how a house is performing, thus you're making it tighter, you've got to be more sensitive to those indoor pollution items.
Yeah, we were in a house 4 years ago. It was a dome house, and we were in the house, and we were like, okay, what? There's a propane insert in the fireplace in the living room, and we're like, where does this actually vent?
Yeah.
Like, where's it going? And we found out that it was an unvented propane appliance, and they had a small child living in the house. Not that, being reckless with your carbon monoxide is okay with adults, but it just feels a little worse when you're dealing with protecting a child. in my esteem. And we run into that regularly. It's not everybody. Most people have a professional that they come in who points at the things and says, you know, that's wrong. We should do that right. But we run into these types of unvented appliances all the time. And whenever we hear in the winter, and you've heard them too, you know you have. It happened in Jericho 2 years ago, where you have a family who never wakes up. And, you know, you're across the street and you see the fire truck pull up, and a loved neighbor had a carbon monoxide episode at their house, and they and their family and their pets are all gone. And this is the type of thing that causes that. So make sure that if you have a propane appliance, you get it checked at least every 2 years, if not every year, and you have an oil burning appliance, that you have that checked every year. And if you have a wood burning appliance, make sure you have your chimneys clean to avoid chimney fires.
You know, and Chris and I were again on another house. I mean, all these stories keep coming back. But it was a house that was roughly 10 years old. It probably had had 15 different maintenance visits over the years by heating professionals. It had a propane fired unit, and we checked it. And when I put the combustion analyzer on it, I thought there was something wrong with it because it actually pegged out, shut down, and couldn't go any higher. And it was reading at 10,000 parts per million. And once again, we're talking about CO2 monitor right now and here, but we're also talking about CO monitors and how that's really poisonous to you. So the carbon monoxide is the poisonous one. And when you were at 10,000 parts per million, you start to get really adversely affected at 9 parts in a million and above. So they were at 10,000. Now, granted, it was venting outside, but the problem was...
There was window, right?
Well, it was near a window, but also from the original setup, from the manufacturer, the wrong burners were put into the unit for a different fuel source for natural gas instead of propane, and it had never been properly tested by these other heating professionals, apparently, with a combustion analyzer, and thus, if that would have ever had a crack in the line, those people would not have gotten up. You know, they would have slept forever. At the same time, we are talking about monitoring this and having the appropriate alarms. Last week, I talked about some more sensitive type of CO detectors, because most CO detectors off the shelf...
The ones that don't have a readout.
Yes, they trigger at 32 parts per million sustained. That means it has to stay there at that level for a long period of time.
Which is three times what we want it to be.
Exactly.
Maximum.
Exactly. But Kitta is one manufacturer that right now, for it's only $50. You can pick it up at Home Depot. They do offer their unit. It's a Kitta KNCOU-B. KN-COU-B. It sells for approximately $50, and it has a digital readout, and it'll test down to 10 parts per million. But if you're seeing 10 parts per million, you know something's going on. Now, it could be episodic. It could be that you started your car, pulled it out very quickly, and then it goes right back down. But if you're seeing that constantly at those numbers, you need to be doing something about that and getting it checked out by a professional.
Absolutely. Carbon monoxide is the one where the carbon monoxide fits into the hemoglobin of your red blood cells and doesn't leave. So any red blood cell that has interacted with carbon monoxide is no longer usable. It has to be removed from the bloodstream and replaced by blood marrow or with a transfusion. That's a really dangerous one. So what do we have here on the... let me just throw the numbers out there. Please, if you have a question about your project or your home or any question about building and building science, call us at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. We have just a couple more bits to tick off on the indoor air quality. We have asthma triggers, which are, you know, things like dust and dust mites and small particulates. We have the off-gassing from spray foam. So this is a big one for us, because when we recommend someone use spray foam, which we try to use as little as possible for a number of reasons, but one of them is because the fumes are really bad. But they're only bad for like the first 5 hours. So if you are going to be having some spray foam work done on your house, then your contractor should say, is there a possibility that you could be out of the house for the 5 hours directly after we're doing the foaming?
Well, actually, the EPA, just to throw this out there, the EPA requires that you're out of the house for 23 to 72 hours after it's applied. And you say, why 23 hours? And I can only fathom the guess that someone calls up complaining, I got to be out of my house for an entire day? No.
Just a little less.
Yeah, just 23 hours. But you definitely want to make sure that you are having proper safety protocols in place to ventilate the space before you return. Right now we have a call from Dick in Waterbury.
Right around the corner. Hey, Dick, how can we help you?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing well, sir. How about you?
Good. Hey, is this the same Jim Bradley that used to do some training courses at the Essex Technical Center?
Back a while ago, there were some on the actual weatherization ones. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I took one of the courses from you.
Excellent.
Yeah. So my question is, I put in a heat pump hot water heater this summer in my basement.
Yes.
And I kind of held off for a little while because I was concerned about cooling down the basement, particularly in the wintertime. My basement is heated. I've got a pellet stove down there. Surprisingly, I did when I put it in. I also had a condensate pump installed, but I don't get any condensation. In the summertime, I do a little bit. I keep a dehumidifier in front of my pump room because I do get some condensation, obviously, coming off the pipes in there.
So
even without that, I'm a little surprised that I don't get anything.
It seems to me like you might want to look at what mode it's working in, right? The hybrid heat pumps have three modes. One is all electric. One is high heat pump only, where you have to be getting condensate if there's any moisture in the room at all. And the other is the hybrid, where it decides switching on and off between electric, straight electric, and hybrid based on conditions that it decides. So that's where I'd start. And if you just make sure that it's firmly on hybrid mode, and then
see. Yeah, I believe it is.
Okay. If you're not getting any condensate, are you getting any water on the ground? It sounds like, because you can almost not run one of these things without getting condensation.
Well, that's what I was surprised at, because when I first put it in, I put a 5-gallon bucket there and put the drain pipe into that just to see.
Sure.
And I got, a little bit, not enough at all to kick off the pump to say, okay, empty this out now.
Right.
And since then, it's been actually pretty dry.
Yeah. Do me a favor. Yeah. Push the unit into straight heat pump mode. All right. There are three settings. Right, and leave it on heat pump mode for a couple of days, and check again. You can always switch it back to the hybrid mode, but if it's in the heat pump mode and you're not getting any condensate, then I think we need to have someone look at where the condensate line, maybe it's not hooked up right, maybe there is a pan in the unit to hold a certain amount of water before it overflows into the condensate line. Maybe it's just not in that mode enough to and it evaporates between. Those are what I think. The other thing I wanted to point out is if you have a condensation coming from your cold water lines, which is, I assume, what you're talking about with drips, instead of using a dehumidifier, just get that 3/4-inch or 1/2-inch pipe insulation and put that on it, and you will not have any drips from that at all.
I've done all that. The only place I didn't put any around is any of the valves and fittings and shutoffs and such in there.
Okay. Well, then you've done everything. If you still have a high humidity, I would not think that the condensation from the cold water line would be the major cause of the humidity in there.
And Dick, during the summer months, you mentioned that you do see some condensate. Are you running or opening windows at all during that time, during the summer months?
In the basement.
Not in the basement, nope.
Okay, good. We're just wondering about that. Have you ever tried a relative humidity sensor, or just basically the name for a hygrometer, just to see what the relative humidity is in the basement?
Actually, I don't think I have put one in. I have one upstairs, and it runs, 35, 40, 50%.
Perfect. Sure. Yeah,
that's a good number.
I would check the basement, though, just to see, maybe with that pellet stove, maybe something's going on that it's drying it out a bit more in the basement.
If you had super dry air because of the pellet stove, that could drive your relative humidity down and would reduce the condensation that your heat pump was creating.
Yeah. So I would do that.
Other than that, even in the summertime, I'm fortunate. It's a house built in the 50s. I don't have any moisture. The only time I've had moisture has been human inflicted.
Sure, there's a story or two behind that.
Yeah, there is. And I currently, I did get one of the radon detectors for the state this summer, and so I've got that sitting down there, and I think come springtime it says you could let it go for a complete winter.
Yep.
And then I'll get it sent in and check that.
Well, good.
Absolutely. Excellent. Sounds like you're doing all the right things. Do me a favor.
No.
Do that bit with the turning on straight heat pump. Put the relative humidity monitor on there. You know, take a couple of data points a day just to see what's happening, daytime, nighttime, and send us an email with your results, and we'll dive in a little deeper.
Okay, will do. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, Dick. And right now we have Steve in Waitsfield on the line. Steve, how can we help you today?
Hey, good afternoon. Actually, I sent you guys an email a week or so ago, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to call in to follow up with you today, but I happen to have cell phone air service as long as I keep my hand in the air.
And the aluminum foil hat. You got to keep that on.
Tin foil.
How'd you know? It's a picture phone?
Exactly.
But, so do us a favor and just recap what the question was.
Sure. It's be as brief as I can. I changed vinyl soffit vent a couple years back, and unknowingly, I think I replaced it with vents that were too small on an area basis based on my ridge vent.
Yes.
I stuck my head up there earlier this fall, because I was going to blow in some more cellular insulation in there. It's original 2002. I think it's like R30 bats up there now. And I noticed some black spots up on the roof. That the last time I was up there 6-plus years ago, I never noticed that before. So I've since added, I did a calculation based on the ridge vent area, how much soffit vent. I've gone back and cut in new soffit vents, so I think now I'm fine. But before I just go blow some more insulation up there, do I have a mold problem up there that I inadvertently caused by undersizing the vents for a few years? Is the soffit vent I put in actually okay? And if I go do this, if those two yes or no are fixed, is there other stuff I should do other than just blowing more insulation?
Yeah, definitely. There's lots of things to consider. This goes back to what Chris said, where sometimes we'll get called up and say, okay, I just did this, but now I have this problem. And it's like, we wish we could have gotten there sooner. So with that, one thing that people consider is, well, this much insulation is good. This much more is going to be that much better, but they never considered air sealing first. Then you have other people, like sometimes roofers will come out and tell you, well, all you got to do is increase your ventilation and you're going to deal with, you know, your mold problem. You're going to deal with icicle problems and everything else. Never really getting to the fact that the attic flat, that plane, needs to be air sealed first. And that's with caulking, foams, things we've talked about in the past. And you can have less insulation, but with proper air sealing, perform so much better than if you just filled the whole attic full of insulation. And to stop the durability problem, you really need to make sure you're not getting the warm, moist air into that space first and foremost, regardless of the ventilation. Now, a vented attic is important, and doing the proper calculations and making sure that is handled is great. I would also suggest that if you do have the presence of any dark mold or green or white or whatever, or a combination thereof, that you get that treated before you go ahead and put more insulation in there as well, because it does eat the actual surfaces. You know, if you've got the proper temperature, if you've got the proper food source, and you know, you've got the moisture, then you're going to have that mold being active, and it can actually really start to rot out the structure. So getting that killed or remediated is important. There's a lot of ways to do that. There's some homeowner options as well. We can talk to you about that more off the air. To your email. But those would be some of the things that I would really consider first and foremost, and not just put more insulation up there until the air ceiling's done. You've blocked that air circulation pathway from the house into the attic, and then I'd be comfortable with treating the mold so it won't come back, and then adding more insulation is the way I would handle it, sir.
Makes perfect sense to me, and that's kind of what I was thinking. There's more to this than just throwing more insulation up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And to add to that, the best way to test whether or not your new situation is venting properly is to remediate that mold and wait a season and see if it comes back, right? Because the mold is going to tell us whether or not it's venting properly.
Blower door test. I mean, a simple blower test would help too, with an infrared camera scan. So you could do all this at once and then immediately go and get this thing filled and insulated the way you want to. With that being said, if you do the blower door test with an EEN contractor through Efficiency Vermont, there is a cost to that. It's money well spent, mm-hmm. and you'll get that offset yep. by the rebate monies you get back for doing the work that you're going to do anyway.
Perfect. Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in,
makes
Steve.
Perfect sense.
And one of the things that Chris and I were talking about before we start the show today is categorizing these indoor air quality in a couple different ways, when it's existing construction or new construction, because there's different considerations on each. Because when you're looking at new construction, almost by default, as I mentioned earlier, some of the construction requirements out there for how leaky a house can be to meet code, which is 3 air changes per hour, that's going to make a house tighter. It's going to be capturing more air inside. And you're going to want to make sure that, you know, during the first year that a house is actually standing since it was built, there's approximately 500 gallons of water released into the air from the concrete and the building materials. And if your house is really tight, then that's going to, you know, increase that moisture level inside there.
That's also known as construction moisture, right? There's a load in the materials you're building with, and it takes, you know, a month or so, maybe 2 months for that to dry out.
Yes, and so some people would say, well, then why are we making our house so tight? Why don't we just go like the old-style construction and have 13 to 20 to 30 air changes per hour? We've seen some. One, our leakiest was 40.
Yeah.
40 air changes per hour.
But there was a 4-foot hole in the roof.
Yeah. So people would say just keep it leaky so then you can get all those contaminants out. Well, once again, in older construction, when you allow a house to be depressurized by air leaking out of the house, usually through the attic, it's going to then re-equalize that pressure by bringing it across the building materials that can have these contaminants, whether it's the building materials or the actual vermin that may be living in the walls. In fact, I talked to an individual just the other day. The house is only 12 years old, and they recently started renting the house, and they hear mice in the walls. And so that, just think of this, if there's mice in the walls and you've got a leaky house, especially in a windy environment where this one is pushing those things through the house, and you're breathing that into the airstream. It doesn't mean you're going to have an immediate, and we're not trying to scare anybody with this, we're trying to make you aware of this and just, you know, what to look for, but it doesn't mean you're going to have an immediate health issue, but the accumulative effect, the stresses that it continues to put on the body become really important over time, and that's why the spaces in which we live, we want to make sure the air is as clean and healthy as possible. Part of that is getting the right equipment, yes, because if you do not filter the air and bring in fresh air from outside, your lungs will be doing it. So either you get it done mechanically or you're going to be mechanically doing it. And once again, last week I said we take in about 2 tablespoons of particulates into our bodies each day just by what we breathe.
Right. And although we're all wearing masks a lot, and that will be, so maybe bring it down to a tablespoon and a half.
Tablespoon of mouse crap. Oh great.
<It's>, oh, boy.
I feel so relieved.
We could do a deep dive on that one. I think we're going to leave that one alone right now. But if we're going to be putting ventilation systems in our house, or if we have a ventilation system already in our house, we need to think about maintaining these things. Because if we're using mechanical ventilation, and by that I mean a balanced ventilation, where we're supplying air and removing air, then those filters have to be changed on a regular basis.
You're not talking just about a furnace, hot air furnace with a simple fiberglass filter. You're talking about something more.
Yes. And so there's something called the MERV, which I have the definition of it. It's an odd definition, and I put it on the video for last week's website on the YouTube channel. But the MERV ratings go from MERV 1 all the way up to like MERV 30. And the higher the number, the more particles it's removing. And a MERV 8 is pretty much the standard for ventilation systems. A HEPA filter or a HEPA equivalent is MERV 18 or above. So you just have to think about that when you're looking at the systems, what level of cleanliness you're going to want for that. And there's actually a bit of a play there, because if you are sizing, or you, not you obviously, but your ventilation specialist is sizing a unit and they switch out the filters from a MERV 8 to a MERV 18, that fan has to work harder to push the air through that filter. So you have to make sure that the end amount of air that's coming into the house at the diffuser in the rooms is what you're basing it on, not what's happening back at the box with, you know, before it has to push it through the filter. But we have to put a maintenance system on, whether or not you're going to make a Google calendar or some other kind of calendar that says change the filters or clean the filters or whatever it is. And every 5 years or so, all of the ductwork should be cleaned. You should call someone
gosh,
like
that's hugely important.
Chuck's Heating has a special service. They'll come in and for something like $500, they will clean all of the ductwork throughout your house for those balanced ventilation systems. This is one of the things that we in the high performance housing and development industry have kind of dropped the ball on. But I don't walk away from a new house that I was a consultant on without a handbook. And in that handbook, it says, have those filters dealt with. Do yourself a favor. Call a company like Chuck's and just say, I want to be on your maintenance schedule. And then they'll call up and they say, it's time for your maintenance. And then you don't have to remember it. But if you don't remember it, then it's just as bad as that filtering it through the walls, because all of that dirt and dust that's in that filter is now what you're breathing. So we've got to make sure, if we're going to put these systems in to increase our indoor air quality, that we're being very careful about maintaining them properly.
And if you do not maintain them, you're also shortening the life of the equipment, because you're making it work harder to push the air through, and then that can get real expensive on the other side. I mean, if you're going through the effort to put one of these systems in, understand how it works, understand how it's maintained, or if you really don't care to mess with it yourself, as Chris said, get a maintenance company in there to help you out with that, because that's really one of the short circuits of the efficiency movement and in this indoor air quality is, yeah, I've got the system in place, but it's almost as bad as getting a bunch of insulation in packages, leaving it in your garage and saying, well, my house is insulated. Well, it's not where it needs to be and it's not performing. So you've got to make sure that these things are being maintained on an appropriate basis, for sure.
So we've dealt with all of the particulates. We've dealt with all of the various things that can be a problem. We've dealt with carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, asbestos, rodents, moisture and mold issues, radon, asthma triggers, dust mites, and Jim is pointing at me. Yes.
Well, I have a question. I mean, because some people are hearing this and they're thinking, well, I've got the hot air furnace and I can put the MERV filter in there and I can even get the UV light, whatever, which if you're just putting a UV light to treat the air and the air is moving by, it's not working. Okay.
So there was that one gentleman we spoke about last week who had lung transplant, and there was an ultraviolet scrubber, which is what they call them, which that sends the air through a series of UV light channels that then kill all of the bacteria or a high percentage of the bacteria. If you try to make one yourself, you probably don't have enough time of that air flowing over the surfaces that have the UV sterilization in order to get the what you're looking for. Don't build this yourself. Buy something that's been designed and installed for your house and will give you the type of sterilization that you're looking for.
And so here's the big difference. I mean, that's filtration. That's how you handle the particulates, those things in the air, the dust and the allergens and things like that, to get those out of the air. But when it comes to VOCs, when it comes to, you know, the CO2, the CO, carbon monoxide could be in there too. But
this isn't going to do anything for that.
Yeah, it's not going to help at all. You've got to get that outdoor air, bringing that back in. But at the same time, if you're pushing those, the polluted air, if you will, out of the house, capturing the heat and sometimes the energy in that airstream through an ERV instead of an HRV, and then you're bringing back in fresh air that then picks that heat and that energy back up and puts it back into the house. That's where you can go ahead and dilute or remove those particulates. I'm brought back to this one house that we built not too long ago, a beautiful home on the lake. It was a very, very tight house. It was 0.7 air changes per hour, so almost near the passive house level, and the gentleman inside was an expert chef. And he wanted to go ahead and have 168,000 BTU propane cooktop on the unit. And then he also wanted to have a big a vent hood. But then they had a 70,000 BTU propane space, like a fireplace, which was great. But then you're talking about all these particulates, and you could not vent all of those BTUs or the effluent that comes through that, the contaminants from that cooktop, out fast enough because of the way that the house was set up and as tight as it was. So we had to go through this elaborate system to make sure that the indoor air was coming back in, it was being heated, and that you had, you know, safe levels, healthy levels of air inside the home.
There's a very good article by Joe Stubrick where he lays out how to create makeup air. So if you're going to depressurize a house by having a 1500 CFM range hood in order to get all those particulates out, and you have a tight house, your house is going to be sucking in the whole time. You're going to have this weird negative pressure. So what Joe Stubrick says in this article is you have to bring in fresh air, and as a matter of fact, a number of companies make specific HRVs, which are only there to filter and to preheat and then send in makeup air for these huge range hoods. So these huge range hoods are very specific and a very particular situation. They have to be dealt with in a very particular way. I will be putting a link to that article on the YouTube channel when we get this video up.
You know, the one thing that I was watching this thing on This Old House not too long ago, and they were talking.
Is that show still on?
It is. And they were talking about a house that was built 15 years ago. All foamed, everything was really, really tight, but the air was just stale. And so, once again, we're getting to that. Even in new construction, you need to make sure you're getting that ventilation appropriate. Now, exhaust-only ventilation with a bath fan only.
But on timers or on thermostats.
That can work, but the best is the balance. So you're getting that energy back, and you're getting the fresh air back in the house, and you're not drawing air across other building materials or other things left behind that you really don't want to be breathing, for sure.
So, Jim and I have been talking about this monitor that I bought. This is the monitor, the IQ Air is the name of the unit, and the specifics on the unit I will put on the website, on the YouTube channel. But I bought two of them, and what we want to do is we want to get a list of you, our listeners, mm-hmm. and we want to do a study, just a very informal study, House Calls Vermont. If you're interested in finding out what the indoor air quality is in your house, send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com, and we're going to put together a list of 10 or 15 of you listeners, and we're going to get you this indoor air quality monitor, and we're going to do the same test that Brian just did. We're going to have you put it in your bedroom. We're going to have you have the door open one night, the door closed the next night, door open the night after that, door closed after that, and then we're going to collect the data, and we'll take the sensor, the monitor, and we'll put it in somebody else's house, and we'll take, hopefully we'll get 10 or 15 people in the study, and we'll be able to tell you what's going on with the indoor air quality in your bedroom when you're sleeping. And so we're just grabbing the bull by the horns. This is, you know, citizen science at work, doing some data collection. So please, if you're interested in being a part of this informal survey, send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. And hopefully by next week we'll be able to start getting the indoor air quality monitor out to you all, and maybe in the spring we'll be able to release what the results were.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, we're right now at 1,345 parts per million of carbon dioxide. When we had the break, we stepped out of the studio for a second. It went from 1,300 to 1,200 in about 3 seconds. So that tells you how quickly opening the door can make a change in how that's all operating. We're coming down to the end of the show. We are working on having another broadcast, although it won't be on WDEV. It'll be on the YouTube channel. We haven't come up with a time or date yet, but we're hoping to, because we're having such a great response from everybody, and we think we'd like to have some more time to answer your questions. At some point in the near future, maybe January, maybe the middle of January, we'll be starting to do a weekly live YouTube call-in as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Excellent. And, you know, some of the things, I'm even looking now that there's more items, even on this list, that we could go into from the DIY projects and things and some of the contaminants you need to be looking out for. I would definitely say before you start a home improvement project, look things over. Consider lead. Consider asbestos. You know, asbestos can be in the vermiculite insulation that we talked about before.
It could be in the floor tiles.
Those 8x8 floor tiles, either in the tile itself or in the adhesive that was used to hold it down. But 8x8 is usually that indicator that it contained it.
Exterior siding.
Exterior siding can have it. You can also have it in your sheetrock mud and your sheetrock tape. You can have it in the popcorn ceilings and in caulking. So once again, not trying to cause concern, just trying to promote awareness so that you go to the Vermont Department of Health's website, look at how these things should be dealt with. And, you know, I've heard the horror stories of someone saying, oh, I got my shop vac out and I vacuumed all this asbestos out or this vermiculite out. And basically you just send all those fibers around your house at 180 miles an hour. So not really a safe way to do that. So once again, we're here to help. We're here to answer your questions. We love the responses we've been getting, but understand that our emphasis is how to get you the best information so what you're doing, either you're hiring a professional or doing the work yourself, that you're doing it in the correct sequence, in the right way, following the proper safeguards, ensuring the durability of the home and your investment, but also making sure that the occupants are healthy and safe at the same time.
Last week when we had Robin King on, I was just listening to the video as I was editing it for the YouTube channel. She said something which I think is going to become our de facto motto for the next couple of weeks and months until we come up with a better one, but I thought it was great. She said, I love that you guys are building science knowledge, and that's it for me. Building science knowledge is what we're doing here. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week Saturday.
With Windows.
You yes. never thought there was an hour's worth to talk about Windows, but we assure you there is. This is Chris West. Until next week.
And Jim Bradley, we will see you then.
House Calls Vermont on WDEV, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com, RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield, Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex, Curtis Lumber. A Curtis Lumber is near you. Find out where at CurtisLumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Vermont at HomeBuildersVT.com. By Poly Construction. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all online at polyconstruction.com. And for real estate advice, call Ken Libby at Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, 802-793-2002. Do join us again next week at 1230 for House Calls Vermont here on WDEV.